Okay, so this is chapter 7, called The Sorting Hat. So if you remember, they just made it Hogwarts.
I don't remember, but okay.
That's okay. The door swung open at once. A tall, black-haired witch in emerald-green robes stood there. She had a very stern face, and Harry's first thought was that this was not someone to cross.
"The first year's Professor McGonagall," said Hagrid.
"Thank you, Hagrid. I will take them from here." She pulled the door wide. The entrance was so big you could have fit the whole of the Dursleys' house in it. The stone walls were lit with flaming torches like the one in Gringotts. The ceiling was too high to make out, and a magnificent marble staircase facing them led to the upper floors. They followed Professor McGonagall across the flagged stone floor. Harry could hear the drone of hundreds of voices from doorway to the right. The rest of the school must already be here. But Professor McGonagall showed the first years into a small empty chamber off the hall. They crowded in, standing rather closer together than they would have usually, peering about nervously.
"Welcome to Hogwarts," said Professor McGonagall. "The start of term banquet will begin shortly, but before you take your seats in the great hall, you will be sorted into your houses. The sorting is a very important ceremony because while you are here, your house will become something like your family within Hogwarts. You have classes with the rest of your house, sleep in your house dormitory, and spend free time in your house common room." The four houses are called Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Slytherin. Each house has its own noble history and has produced outstanding witches and wizards. While you are at Hogwarts, your triumphs will earn your house points, while any rule breaking will lose house points. At the end of the year, in the stupidest ceremony ever, the house with the most points is awarded the House Cup, a great honor because it's so arbitrary. I hope each of you will be a credit to whichever house
becomes yours. Jesse, read it for real.
I am.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Do it for real. Do it for real.
I am doing it for real.
You're not. You added the word stupid and arbitrary.
Just adding some commentary, that's all.
But you can add it, but just make sure that it's not in McGonagall's voice.
Okay. "The sorting ceremony will take place in a few minutes in front of the rest of the school. I suggest you all smarten yourselves up as much as you can while you're waiting." Okay. Her eyes lingered for a minute on Neville's cloak, which was fastened under his left ear, and on Ron's smudged nose. Harry nervously tried to flatten his hair. "I shall return when we are ready for you," said Professor McGonagall. "Please wait quietly." She left the chamber. Harry swallowed.
"How exactly do they sort us into houses?" he asked Ron.
"Some sort of test, I think. Fred says it hurts a lot, but I think he was joking." Harry's heart gave a horrible jolt. A test in front of the whole school? But he didn't know any magic yet. What on earth would he have to do? He hadn't expected something like this the moment they arrived. He looked about nervously and saw that everyone else looked terrified, too. No one was talking much except Hermione Granger, who was whispering very fast about all the spells she'd learned, wondering which one she'd need. Harry tried hard not to listen to her. He'd never been more nervous, never, not even when he'd had to take a school report home to the Dursleys, saying he'd somehow turned his teacher's wig blue. He kept his eyes fixed on the door. Any second now, Professor McGonagall would come back and lead him to his doom. Then something happened that made him jump about a foot in the air. Several people behind him screamed, "What the—" He gasped. So did the people around him. About 20 ghosts had just streamed through the back wall. Pearly white and slightly transparent, they glided across the room, talking to one another and hardly glancing about the first years. They seemed to be arguing. What looked like a fat little monk was saying, "Forgive and forget, I say. We ought to give him a second chance." "My dear friar, we haven't given Peeves all the chance he deserves. He's given us all a bad name, and, you know, he's not really even a ghost. I say, what are you all doing here?" A ghost wearing rough and tights had suddenly noticed the first year. Nobody answered.
"New students," said the fat friar, smiling around them. "About to be sorted, I suppose."
A few people nodded mutely.
"Hope to see you in Hufflepuff," said the friar. "My old house, you know."
Move along now, said a sharp voice. "The sorting ceremony is about to start."
Professor McGonagall had returned. One by one, the ghosts floated away through the opposite wall.
"Now, form a line," Professor McGonagall told the first years, "and follow me." feeling oddly as though his legs had turned to lead. Harry got in line behind a boy with sandy hair, with Ron behind him, and they walked out of that chamber, back across the hall, and through a pair of double doors into the great hall. Harry had never imagined such a strange and splendid place. It was lit by thousands and thousands of candles that were floating in midair over four long tables where the rest of the students were sitting. It looked a little bit like the dining hall at Notre Dame. Those tables were laid with glittering gold plates and goblets. The only difference between this and Notre Dame was that boys were allowed in the girls' dorms. Oh, I guess they weren't, actually. At the top of the hall was another long table where the teachers were sitting. Professor McGonagall led the first years up here, so that they came to a halt in line facing the other students, with the teachers behind them. The hundreds of faces staring at them looked like pale lanterns in the flickering candlelight. Dotted here and there among the students, the ghosts shone misty silver. Mainly to avoid all the staring eyes, Harry looked upward and saw a velvety black ceiling dotted with stars. He heard Hermione whispered, "It's bewitched to look like the sky outside. I read about it in Hogwarts, a history." It was hard to believe that there was a ceiling at all, and that the great hall didn't simply open up to the heavens. Harry looked quickly down again as Professor McGonagall placed a four-legged stool in front of the first years. On top of the stool, she put a pointed wizard's hat. This hat was patched and frayed and extremely dirty. Aunt Petunia wouldn't have let it in the house. Maybe they had to try to get a rabbit out of it, Harry thought wildly. That seemed sort of the thing. Noticing that everyone in the hall was now staring at the hat, he stared at it too. For a few seconds, there was complete silence. Then the hat twitched. A rip near the brim opened wide like a mouth, and the hat began to sing. Should I sing it? I can't sing. I'll just recite it. I don't know what the melody should be. Oh, you may not think I'm pretty, but don't judge on what you can see. I'll eat myself if you can find a smarter hat than me. You can keep your bowlers black, your top hat sleek and tall, for I'm the Hogwarts sorting hat, and I can cap them all. There's nothing hidden in your head the sorting hat can't see. So try me on, and I will tell you where you ought to be. You might belong in Gryffindor, where dwell the brave heart. Their daring nerve and chivalry set Gryffindors apart. You might belong in Hufflepuff, where they're just and loyal. Those patient Hufflepuffs are true and unafraid of toil, and also pretty dumb. Or yet in wise old Ravenclaw, if you've got a ready mind, where those of wit and learning will always find their kind. Or perhaps in Slytherin, you'll make your real friends. Those cunning folk use any means to achieve their ends. Yeah, that's not a mark against Slytherin. Man, they really make this thing out to be, like, crystal clear. How bad it is. Like, why don't they just not do that? Maybe? Or why doesn't... I don't know. So put me on, don't be afraid, and don't get in a flap. You're in safe hands, though I have none, for I have a thinking cap. Did you like that? Man, she didn't have enough syllables in all the lines. She's an excellent writer, by the way. The whole hall burst into applause as the hat finished its song. It bowed to each of the four tables and then became quite still again. "So we've just got to try on the hat," Ron whispered to Harry. "I'll kill Freddy, who's going on about wrestling a troll." Harry smiled weakly. Yes, trying on the hat was a lot better than having to do a spell, but he did wish they could have tried it on without everyone watching. That seemed to be asking rather a lot. Harry didn't feel brave or quick-witted or any of it at the moment. If only the hat had mentioned a house for people who felt a bit queasy, that would have been the one for him. Professor McGonagall now stepped forward, holding a long roll of parchment. "When I call your name, put on the hat and sit on the stool to be sorted," she said. "Abbot Hannah," a pink-faced girl with blonde pigtails, stumbled out of line, put on the hat, which fell right down over her eyes, and sat down. A moment's pause. "Hufflepuff," shouted the hat. The table on the right cheered and clapped as Hannah went to sit down at the Hufflepuff table. Harry saw the ghost of the fat friar waving merrily at her. "Bones Susan." "Hufflepuff," shouted the hat again, and Susan scuttled off to sit next to Hannah. "Boot Terry." "Ravenclaw." The table second from the left cheered this time. Several Ravenclaws stood up to shake hands with Terry, as he joined them. Brocklehurst Mandy went to Ravenclaw too, but Brown Lavender became the first new Gryffindor, and the table on the far left exploded with cheers. Harry could see Ron's twin brothers catcalling. Lestrade Millicent then became a Slytherin. Perhaps it was Harry's imagination. After all, he'd heard about Slytherin, but he thought they looked like an unpleasant lot. He was starting to feel definitely sick now. He remembered being picked for teams during gym at his old school. He had always been last to be chosen, not because he was no good, but because no one wanted Dudley to think they liked him. Finch Fletchery Justin. Hufflepuff. Sometimes Harry noticed the hat, shouted out the hat at once, but at others it took a little while to decide. Finnegan Seamus. The sandy-haired boy next to Harry in line sat on the stool for almost a whole minute before the hat declared him a Gryffindor. Granger Hermione. Hermione almost ran to the stool and jumped the hat. And jammed the hat eagerly on her head. Gryffindor, shouted the hat. Ron groaned. A horrible thought struck Harry, as horrible thoughts always do when you're very nervous. What if he wasn't chosen at all? What if he just sat there with head over his eyes for ages? Until Professor McGonagall jerked off his head and said there had obviously been a mistake, and he'd better get back on the train. But Neville Longbottom, the boy who kept losing his toad, was called. He fell over on his way to the stool. The hat took a long time to decide with Neville. When it finally shouted, Gryffindor, Neville ran off, still wearing it, and had to jog back, amid gales of laughter, to give it to MacDougall Mark. See, Neville told it should have been a Hufflepuff, because he's an idiot. That's where the idiots go, by the way. It's a very clear distinction. See, Hufflepuff is the idiots, Ravenclaw's the smart people. Gryffindor is the people who are, like, not, like, super smart, but, like, end up being really good at magic. And then Slytherin's for the evil people. Like, it's as clear as that. There's no distinction whatsoever. No worries. Anyways. Malfoy swaggered forward when his name was called and got his wish at once. The hat barely touched his head when they screamed, Slytherin. In an evil voice, too, probably. Malfoy went to join his friends Crabbe and Goyle, looking pleased with himself. There weren't many people left now. Moon, Knott, Parkinson, then a pair of twin girls, Petile and Petile, then Perksalian, and then at last, Potter, Harry. As Harry stepped forward, suddenly whispered, broke out like hissing fires all over the hall. Potter, did she say? The Harry Potter? And the last thing Harry saw before the hat dropped over his eyes was the hall full of people craning to get a good look at him. The next second, he was looking at the black inside of the hat. He waited. Said a small voice in his ear. Difficult. Yes, very difficult. Plenty of courage, I see. Not a bad mind either. There's talent. Oh, my goodness, yes. And a knife there's to prove yourself. Now, that's interesting. So where shall I put you? Harry gripped the edge of the stool and thought, Not Slytherin, eh? Said the small voice. Are you sure? You could be great, you know. It's all here in your head, and Slytherin will help you on your way to greatness, no doubt about that. No, if you're sure, better be Gryffindor. Harry heard the hat shout the last word to the whole hall. He took off the hat and walked shakily toward the Gryffindor table. He was so relieved to have been chosen and not put in Slytherin, he hardly noticed that he was getting the loudest cheer yet. Percy the Prefect got up and shook his hand vigorously, while the Weasley twins yelled, We got Potter! We got Potter! Harry sat down opposite the ghost in the rough he'd seen earlier. The ghost patted his arm, giving Harry the sudden horrible feeling he just plunged into a bucket of ice-cold water. To be honest, that would feel pretty nice right now. I kind of want that. What? Anyways.
For all you listening at home, I am clinging to Jesse's arm and have just been told to get the fuck off.
Wait, what? I didn't say that. Wait, you misinterpreted what I said. How did you interpret it like that? Okay. I was just imagining, like, punching my head in cold water.
Do you not feel well?
I don't know. very well. Anyways, we'll continue. He could see the high table properly now. At the end nearest him sat Hagrid. Caught his eye. And gave him a thumbs up. Harry grinned back. And there, in the center of the high table, in a large gold chair, sat Albus Dumbledore. Harry recognized him at once from the card he'd gotten out of the chocolate frog on the train. Dumbledore's silver hair was the only thing in the whole hall that shone as brightly as the ghosts. Harry spotted Professor Quirrell, too, a nervous young man from the Leaky Cauldron. He was looking very peculiar in a large purple turban. And now, there were only three people left to be sorted. Thomas Dean, a black boy, even taller than Ron, joined Harry at the Gryffindor table. Turpin Lisa became a Ravenclaw, and then it was Ron's turn. He was pale green by now. Harry crossed his fingers under the table, and a second later the hat had shattered. Gryffindor. Harry clapped loudly with the rest as Ron clapped into the chair next to him. Well done, Ron. Excellent, said Percy Weasley pompously as Harry, across Harry as the beanie blaze was made of Slytherin. Professor McGonagall rolled up her scroll and took the sorting hat away. Harry looked down at the empty gold plate. He only realized just now how hungry he was. The pumpkin pasties seemed ages ago. As Dumbledore had gotten to his feet, he was beaming at the students. His arms opened wide, as if nothing could have pleased him more than to see them all there. Welcome, he said. Welcome to a new year at Hogwarts. Before we begin our banquet, I would like to say a few words. And here they are. Nitwit, Blubber, Oddment, Tweak. Thank you. He sat back down. Everybody clapped and cheered. Harry didn't know whether to laugh or not. Is he a bit mad? He asked Percy uncertainly. Mad? Said Percy airily. He's the genius, best wizard in the world. But yes, he's a bit mad. Potatoes, Harry? Harry's mouth fell open. The dishes in front of him were now piled with food. He had never seen so many things he liked to eat at one table. Roast beef, roast chicken, pork chops and lamb chops, sausages, bacon and steak. Well, that's a lot of meat. Boiled potatoes, roast potatoes, fries, Yorkshire pudding, peas, carrots, gravy, ketchup, and for some strange reason, peppermint humbugs. Rose, of all the things that were listed here, peas and carrots are the only things that were grown. That's disgusting. God.
They're English.
They are English. They can't grow things. They just kill animals.
Right.
Gross. Alright. The Dursleys had never exactly starved Harry, but he'd never been allowed to eat as much as he liked. Dudley had always taken anything Harry really wanted. Even if it made him sick. Harry piled his plate with a little bit of everything except the peppermints, and began to eat. It was all delicious. That does look good, said the ghost in the rough, sadly, watching Harry cut up his steak. Can't you? I haven't eaten in nearly 500 years, said the ghost. I don't need to, of course, but one does miss it. I don't think I've introduced myself. Sir Nicholas de Mimsy Pobbington at your service, resident ghost of Gryffindor Tower. I know who you are, said Ron suddenly. My brothers told me all about you. You're nearly headless Nick.
I would prefer to call me Sir Nicholas de Mimsy, the ghost began stiffly, but Sandy heard Seamus Finnegan interrupted.
Nearly headless? How can you be nearly headless?
Well, you say it, Seamus.
That's actually how you pronounce it?
Yep.
Seamus. I thought people were just making fun of this kid that they were calling him Seamus. I thought it was like you know, a play on the, you know what I mean? Seamus.
Yep.
It's an Irish name, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Seamus Finnegan. Okay. Anyways, so Seamus Finnegan interrupted. Nearly headless? How can you be nearly headless? Sir Nicholas looked extremely miffed, as if there was a little chat. It wasn't going at all the way he wanted. Like this, he said irritably. He seized his left ear and pulled. His whole head swung off his neck and fell to his shoulder, as if it was on a hinge. Somebody had obviously tried to behead him, but had not done it properly.
looking pleased at the stunned look on their faces. Nearly headless, Nick flipped his head back onto his neck and coughed. Said, "So, new Gryffindors. I hope you're going to help us win the house championship this year. Gryffindor has never gone so long without winning. Slytherins have had the cup 6 years in a row. The bloody Baron's becoming almost unbearable. He's the Slytherin ghost." Harry looked over at the Slytherin table and saw a horrible ghost sitting there, with a blank stare, staring eyes, a gaunt face, and robes stained with silver blood. He was sitting right next to Malfoy, who, Harry was pleased to see, didn't look too pleased with the seating arrangements. "How did he get covered in blood?" asked Seamus with great interest. "You've never asked," said Nearly Headless Nick delicately. When everyone had eaten as much as they could, the remains of the food faded from the place, leaving them sparkling clean as before. A moment later, the desserts appeared. Blocks of ice cream, every flavor you could think of. Apple pies, treacle tarts, chocolate eclairs and jam truffles, trifle, strawberries, jello, rice pudding, apple pudding. I didn't say apple pudding, I just said that. So this is where they put all their growing things.
Mm-hmm.
Highly processed, cooked, baked, and in their desserts.
Mm-hmm.
As Harry tried to help himself to a treacle tart, the talk turned to their families. "I'm half and half," said Seamus. "My dad's a muggle. Mom didn't tell him she was a witch till after they were married. Bit of a nasty shock for him." The others laughed. "What about you, Neville?" said Ron. "Well, my gran brought me up, and she's a witch," said Neville. "But the family thought I was all muggle for ages. My great-aunt, Uncle Algy, kept trying to catch me off guard and force some magic out of me. He pushed me off the end of the Blackbeard Pier once. I knew he drowned, but then nothing happened till I was 8. Great-Uncle Algy came around for dinner, and he was hanging me out of an upstairs window by the ankles. My great-auntie Enid offered him a meringue, and he accidentally let go. But I bounced all the way down the garden and ran into the road. They were all really pleased, but Gran was crying. She was so happy. And you should have seen their faces when I got in here. They thought I might not be magic enough to come, you see. Great-Uncle Algy was so pleased, he bought me my toad." Harry's other side, Percy Weasley and Hermione, were talking about lessons. "I do hope they start right away. There's so much to learn. I'm particularly interested in transfigurations, you know, turning something to something else. Of course, it's supposed to be very difficult." "You'll be starting small, just matches into needles, that sort of thing." Harry, who was starting to feel warm and sleepy, looked up the high table again. Hagrid was drinking deeply from the goblet. Professor McGonagall was talking to Professor Dumbledore. Professor Quirrell, in his absurd turban, was talking to the teacher with greasy black hair, a hooked nose, and sallow skin. It happened very suddenly. The hooked-nosed teacher looked past Quirrell's turban straight into Harry's eyes, and a sharp hot pain shot across the scar on Harry's forehead. "Ouch!" Harry clasped a hand to his head. "What is it?" asked Percy. "Nothing." The pain had gone as quickly as it had come. Harder to shake off was the feeling that Harry had gotten from the teacher's look, a feeling that he didn't like Harry at all. You know, he misinterprets Snape's signals constantly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he hasn't even heard anything bad about him, and clearly the look was from Quirrell, not Snape. And yet, he's immediately attributing it to Snape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyways. "Who's that teacher talking to Professor Quirrell?" he asked Percy. "Oh, you know Quirrell already, do you? No wonder he's looking so nervous. That's Professor Snake. He teaches potions. He doesn't want to. Everyone knows he's after Quirrell's job. Knows an awful lot about the dark arts. Snake does." Harry watched Snake for a while, but Snake didn't look at him again. "Is it okay that I call him Snake?"
No, why are you calling him Snake? Stop it. Call him Snake.
Because he's a Slytherin.
Stop it.
At last, the desserts too disappeared, and Professor Dumbledore got to his feet again. The hall fell silent. "Just a few more words now that we are all fed and watered. I have a few start-of-term notices to give you. First years should note that the forest on the grounds is forbidden to all pupils, and a few of our older students would do well to remember that as well." Dumbledore's twinkling eyes flashed in the direction of the Weasley twins. I have also been asked by Mr. Filch, the caretaker, to remind you that no magic should be used between classes in the corridors. Quidditch trials will be held in the second week of the term. Anybody interested in playing for their house teams should contact Madame Hooch. And finally, I must tell you this, dear. The third floor corridor on the right-hand side is out of bounds to everyone who does not wish to die a very painful death. Harry laughed, but he was one of the few who did. He's not serious, he muttered to Percy. Must be, said Percy, frowning at Dumbledore. It's odd, because he usually gives us a reason why we're not allowed to go somewhere. The forest is full of dangerous beasts. Everybody knows that. I think he might have told us prefix, at least. And now, before we go to bed, let us sing the school song, cried Dumbledore. Harry noticed that the other teacher's smiles had become rather fixed. Dumbledore gave his wand a little flick, as if he was trying to get a fly off the end, and a long gold ribbon flew out, which rose high above the tables and twisted itself, snake-like, into words. Everybody pick their favorite tune, said Dumbledore, and off we go. And the school bell looked. Hogwarts, 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 teach us something, please, whether we be old and bald or young scabbies. Our heads could do with filling with some interesting stuff, for another bear and full of hair, dead flies and bits of fluff. So teach us things worth knowing, bring back what we forgot. Just do your best, we'll do the rest and learn until our brains all rot. Everybody finished singing the song at different times. At last, only the Weasley twins were left singing along to a slow funeral march. Dumbledore conducted their last few lines with his wand. When they had finished, he was one of those who clapped the loudest. Ah, music, he said, wiping his eyes. A magic beyond all we do here. And now, bedtime. Off you trot. The Gryffindor first years followed Percy through the chattering crowds, out of the great hall, and up the marble staircase. Harry's legs were like lead again, but only because he was so tired and full of food. He was too sleepy even to be surprised at the people in the portraits along the corridors whispered and pointed as they passed, or that twice Percy led them through the doorways hidden behind sliding panels and hanging tapestries. They climbed more staircases, yawning and dragging their feet, and Harry wondered just how much further they had to go when they came to a sudden halt. A bundle of sticks was floating in midair ahead of them. And as Percy took a step, they started throwing themselves at him. Peeve, shouted Percy, first years. A poltergeist. He raised his voice. Peeves, show yourself. A loud, rude sound, like air being let out of a balloon, answered. Do you want me to go to the Bloody Baron? There was a pup, and a little man with wicked dark eyes. A wide mouth appeared, floating across over in the air, clutching the walking sticks. Ooh, he said with an evil cackle. Ickle firsties. What fun. He swooped at them suddenly. They all ducked. Go away, Peeves, or the Baron will hear about this. I mean it, barked Percy. Peeves stuck out his tongue and vanished, dropping the walking sticks on Neville's head. They heard him zooming away, rattling Colt's form as he passed. You want to watch out for Peeves, said Percy, and they set off again. The Bloody Baron's the only one who control him. He won't even listen to us, Prefects. Here we are. At the very end of a corridor hung a portrait of a very fat woman in a pink silk dress. Password, she said. Caput Draconis, said Percy, and the portrait swung forward to reveal a round hole in the wall. They all scrambled through it. Neville needed a leg up, and found themselves in the Gryffindor common room, a cozy round room full of squashy armchairs. Percy directed the girls through one door to their dormitory, and the boys to another. At the top of the spiral staircase, they're obviously in one of the towers. They found their beds at last. 5 four-poster beds hung with deep red velvet curtains. Their trunks had already been brought up. Too tired to talk much, they pulled on their pajamas and fell into bed. Great food, isn't it? Ron muttered to Harry through the haze. Get off, Scabbers, he's chewing my sheets. He was going to ask Ron if he'd any of the treacle tart, but he fell asleep almost at once. Perhaps Harry had eaten a bit too much because he had a very strange dream. He was wearing Professor Quirrell's turban, which kept talking to him, telling him he must transfer to Slytherin at once because it was his destiny. He told the turban he didn't want to be in Slytherin. He got heavier and heavier. He tried to pull it off, but tightened painfully. And there was Malfoy, laughing at him as he struggled. And then Malfoy turned to the hook-nosed teacher, Snape, whose laugh became high and cold. There was a burst of green light, and Harry woke, sweating and shaking. He rolled over and fell asleep again. When he woke the next day, he didn't remember the dream at all. And that's the end of chapter 7. We wake back here.